In his new book, The Real Crash, America's Coming Bankruptcy and How to Save Yourself and Your Country, economist Peter Schiff details how we have not come close to fixing the problems that brought the U.S. economy to the doorstep of ruin in 2008. In the new book, he presents a dire and reluctant conclusion that is sure to cause a firestorm. America needs to default and declare bankruptcy to begin fixing our damaged economy. And it's a great pleasure to welcome Peter Schiff to the roundtable. Thank you very much for being with us. I appreciate it.
Sure, and thanks for having me on the show.
Well, I appreciate you being here. Give us a sense of how you came to this conclusion about the country and how we have to declare bankruptcy if we are going to move in a positive direction.
Well, you know, we're basically broke. That is the problem. And what we've done in the aftermath of the crisis hasn't solved that problem. It's simply compounded it. We are more deeply in debt now than ever before, and we are less able to pay it. See, because the debt is so enormous, the Federal Reserve has to keep interest rates at zero. Because if interest rates were to rise to, you know, a free market level, the U.S. government would not be able to afford to make the payments of the interest on the debt, let alone repay the principal. So in order to prop up this over-leveraged economy, and it's not just the government, it's private citizens, it's the banks, the Federal Reserve keeps interest rates at zero, but that is the problem. The biggest problem with our economy is that interest rates are too low. And because we don't have a market rate of interest, but we have a government price-fixing interest rates, we have all sorts of distortions in our economy. We don't save enough, we don't produce enough, we don't invest enough, we borrow too much, we spend too much, particularly the U.S. government. And these imbalances get worse the longer interest rates are staying low. We have to allow the economy to restructure. We have to let interest rates go up, but then the only way to deal with the enormity of our debt is to restructure it through a bankruptcy. And when I say the U.S. government needs to declare bankruptcy, I'm not saying that people who own U.S. treasuries should get nothing, that they should get zero on the dollar, or that people who are going to get a government pension or Social Security should get zero, although some people might end up getting zero if we have a means test. But we have to admit that the U.S. government has overpromised, that we can't pay back everything that the U.S. taxpayer is on the hook for. And we need to be realistic about it, because if we don't do that, if we pretend we can pay, then we're going to have massive inflation, which is the same thing as default. You pay people back in money that has very little value, but that is going to do far more damage to our economy than a legitimate restructuring, where we admit that we can't pay, and we at least pay people something, but we give them money of value, instead of giving them everything in money of no value.
When you look to those who are able to make these changes, and you explore the root causes of the crash, and as you point out in the book, that those root causes have not been properly addressed, and that many of the imbalances have in fact gotten worse. So is that because there is not a clear understanding of what the problems were, or that they are trying to protect something else?
Well, it could be a little of both, and it could differ depending on who you ask. I mean, certainly there is a lot of ignorance when it comes to economics in Washington, right? A lot of people don't understand. I mean, the same people that are telling us that the problems are fixed are the same people who told us that there were no problems. And so they don't understand. And since they didn't understand in 2007, they don't understand now. See, even Ben Bernanke, I heard him quoted as saying that the problem is that Americans aren't borrowing and spending as freely as they were before the crisis. That's not the problem. That's a good thing. The problem is that they were borrowing and spending so freely, and why were they doing that? Because the Fed had interest rates too low. It was the low interest rates that altered the behavior that got everybody to behave in a destructive way. We had too much speculation and gambling and home buying because interest rates were too low. So simply keeping them low to encourage more of that same behavior is wrongheaded. What we need is higher interest rates to discourage that behavior. We need more savings and less consumption, right? But that means a deeper recession in the short run, which is the second part of your question, that doing the right thing doesn't feel good in the short run, and that's why politicians don't want it. I mean, they're trying that to an extent in Europe, where they're going for austerity over stimulus, even though it's not real austerity. But the problem is that the bitter-tasting medicine is bitter. You know, and now the Europeans want to spit it out because it doesn't taste good. Well, that's the problem. You've got to swallow that bitter-tasting medicine because it's the only thing that works. So you get cured. If you don't want that sour taste in your mouth and you decided to spend more borrowed money, all you're doing is, you know, taking more, you know, more of this monetary heroin. You're making the problems worse, and in the end, you're going to suffer even more. Because if you think the medicine tastes bad, wait till you see how bad the collapse is going to taste because we don't swallow the medicine.
So when you talk about that, the bad-tasting medicine, is this something that we need right away?
Oh, yeah. The sooner the better. I mean, we're really sick. And, you know, the longer we wait to swallow this medicine, the sicker we're going to get, which means the more the medicine is going to take to cure us. So, you know, as I said, if it tastes bad now, the longer we wait to swallow it, the worse it's going to taste. And the worst taste of all is if we never swallow it, because, you know, then it's really bad.
Okay, so what's in the medicine? What do we need to take?
Well, the medicine means that we have to let interest rates go up. And when interest rates go up, the government is not going to be able to pay the interest on the debt. It's just going to take too big of the budget. So it's going to require the government restructuring its debt and telling the bondholders that they're not going to get everything that they loaned, that it's not possible. And then repay the bondholders, the government would have to default on all its domestic obligations. And I mean, that's not fair, and I don't think the public is going to put up with that. You know, a lot of the bonds are held by the Japanese or the Chinese. I mean, why should we put their interest ahead of the interest of other Americans? So I think everybody has to share in this pain if they are expecting something from the U.S. government. But it's also going to mean that the government is going to have to come clean about its lack of ability to pay the pensions it promised to its workers or to Social Security and Medicare recipients. The government has to be scaled back because if it can't borrow all this money, because if interest rates go up, the government can't borrow anymore. And so that means it has to either massively increase taxes or slash spending. I would argue that if they tried to raise taxes at this point, they might actually backfire on them and they'll get even less revenue, especially if they try to raise taxes on the upper income earners that are already paying the lion's share of the tax burden. If they try to raise taxes on them, I mean, it's really going to hurt the economy. So we have to really start cutting back on government and getting government out of the economy, getting it out of health care, at least on a federal level, getting it out of education. We need to repeal a lot of the rules and regulations that have inhibited economic growth. You know, more economical for businesses to outsource their jobs rather than hire Americans. That's a big function of government policy, of regulation and taxation. That needs to change. We need to get the government out of the market so that we can have capitalism again, so that we have resources allocated based on the market, not based on centrally planning.
And with this, as you mentioned, comes a complete overhaul of the current tax system by eliminating those taxes that discourage productivity, the federal income tax, the payroll tax, the state tax, the gift tax, and so we replace it how?
Well, ideally, we would replace it with a tax that doesn't raise as much revenue because I want the government to be much smaller than it is today. But I think you want to have a tax that hits people on consumption. National sales tax is probably the easiest way to go about it. Instead of taxing people on what they earn, you tax them based on what they spend. And, you know, the classic liberal argument is, well, this isn't fair because the rich people don't spend everything. They save a lot of their money, and therefore they'll escape the tax. They won't escape the tax. They'll only avoid the tax until they spend the money they saved. But in the meantime, while it's saved, it's used to grow the economy. It's used to create jobs and to produce products and provide services. You know, all the money is eventually going to be spent. Let's tax it at that point, but don't tax it before it's spent because that is the seed corn that grows the economy. And if the person never spends it and he goes to his grave with millions or billions in the bank, well, then he was a benefactor to society. You know, he didn't spend the money so that the rest of the economy could benefit from it. Well, now somebody is going to inherit it. I don't want to tax it at the inheritance level, but if children decide to do the same thing and not spend that capital but keep using it to grow the economy, then they won't pay the tax. If they want to be playboys, if they want to just start spending the money on women and wine and travel and just have a good time, well, then they're going to pay the tax. But to say, gee, you know, we shouldn't have a consumption-based tax because it doesn't tax the money that the rich save and invest. Thank God it doesn't tax that money. You know, I'd rather have the money invested in the private sector than squandered by the government.
It seems like there is a trickle-down feel to this, though.
Well, I mean, that's what capitalism is. I mean, I guess it got a bad name, this whole trickle-down, you know, from Reagan. But that's the invisible hand. I mean, that's upon which, that's the principle that this country was founded on, that capitalism benefits everybody, that the capitalist pursuing his own self-interest is led by an invisible hand to help everybody else. Because if I try to get rich in a free market without all this government, how do I get rich? I have to figure out how to give the consumer what he wants, the best deal, the best product at the lowest price. And if I succeed, I get rich. And in the process of giving the public what they want, I end up creating a lot of employment opportunities because I can't do it on my own. And so capitalism works. That's how it's always worked. It's socialism that has failed every time it's been tried, where you say, gee, you know, the government, this free market doesn't work. It's not fair. The government has to come in and try to make everything fair. And the only thing they do is they spread the misery around. They make it fair by making the rich poor so that everybody's the same. It doesn't, you know, you want a situation where you have a rising tide lifting all boats, and that's what happens in capitalism. And to the extent that some of the boats aren't rising, it's generally because the government has anchored them down.
It certainly seems, though, there are a lot of people in this country who are not looking to get rich. They're just looking to make ends meet. And for them to buy into your theory that capitalism is going to work and that this trickle-down is eventually going to come to them, it seems like that takes an awful lot of trust.
Well, it's not my theory. I can't take credit for modern-day economics and capitalism. So, you know, and it's not even a theory.
It's the plan you put forward in the book, though, correct?
Right, but I mean, the idea that capitalism works isn't a theory. I mean, it's proven. I mean, it's you know, it does work. I mean, all you have to do is look at, you know, East Germany and West Germany, or look at China and Taiwan, communist China and Taiwan, or communist China and Hong Kong. I mean, you can look at all the examples where societies have been split in half, and where one tries socialism and one tries capitalism. I mean, the evidence is clear what works and what doesn't work. And in fact, if you just look at America, if you look at the 19th century versus the 20th century, we had a lot less government during the 19th century, and the standard of living for the average American rose much more dramatically during that period of time. We created far more wealth, bigger fortunes. We lifted the living standards of the poor and the middle class by a much higher level in the 19th century than in the 20th. And if you look, even if you break the 20th century apart, we did better in the first half than the second half. As we add more government into the equation, we have less economic growth. As you know, more, all these programs, all these spending, it hasn't succeeded. It simply erected barriers. And you know, if somebody is not trying to get rich, if someone just wants to get by, that means they need a job. That means they have to work from somebody who does want to get rich. You see, if you don't want to be an entrepreneur, if you don't want to take the risks, if you don't want to risk capital, if you want to just get a job and punch a clock and get a paycheck, how are you going to do that? You need somebody who's willing to take those risks that you won't take, who's going to accumulate the capital that you don't want to accumulate. So the best way for the average person to get rich is to be in a free market capitalist system. If you're not, if you're just in a command economy, yeah, everybody in the Soviet Union had jobs because the government provided them. But they could buy nothing with their paychecks. You know, they'd wait in line 8 hours to get some bread. I mean, what good was it? It's everything that we have, even the things that you look at now, like cell phones. Everybody has cell phones. Poor people have cell phones. How is it that poor people have cell phones? The free market did that. If it was up to government, you know, hardly anybody would have a cell phone, and they would cost a fortune. But it was because some people tried to get rich that they brought down the price so that everybody can afford them, and they brought up the quality. All the things that we value, we get from the market. It's the stuff that the government is dispensing, health care, education. This is where cost is going through the roof, and the quality goes down. And my book specifically addresses how we've got to get the government out of the areas that it's so screwed up.
So when it comes, and the question I was trying to ask before is, there comes that people who are trying, whatever their motive is, they want to be employed, they want to feed their family, they want to make ends meet, and okay, maybe they want to make a couple bucks on top of it. But at the top, there has to be a trust. They need to trust them. And are they trustworthy is the question, because it seems like a great majority of these people over many decades have been screwed and are very wary.
Is who trustworthy? I mean, because the government certainly isn't trustworthy. I mean, the government is screwing everybody over, and they have the power to do it. I mean, as far as trusting a private individual, a private company, it doesn't matter. You don't have to trust them because you can quit. You know, I can choose to work for somebody. I can quit and work for somebody else. I can choose to buy products from one company, or I can stop and I can buy products from somebody else. So it isn't about trust when it comes to the free market, because I can vote with my feet. You know, if they don't prove that they're the right company to buy from or work for, then somebody else is going to be able to, fill that void. I can shop around and vote with my feet. The problem is, government is there. Government can tax us and regulate us. Whether we have no say. That's where you have to fear the power when it comes from government, because government has force. Private people don't. Nobody can put a gun to my head and say, patronize this restaurant, buy from this company, take this job. I can work for whoever I want, or I can be self-employed if I don't want to work for anybody. I can eat at a restaurant, or I can cook from home. So it's not about trust. But when it comes to the government, it doesn't matter what I do. The government's there to tax me. The government's there to regulate me. Tell me you can do that, you can't do that. So that's where the problem is. It's with Washington and the bureaucrats, not with the capitalists.
But certainly there are a lot of people who want to work who can't right now.
Yeah, that's true. Destroyed a lot of those employment opportunities. I mean, I make this point over and over again in my book. I have a section on labor law. I mean, one of the easy examples of it is the minimum wage law. I mean, the government says, here's the minimum wage law, and it basically says, if your skills are not equal to this minimum wage, it is illegal for you to work. It is illegal for you to accept a job. It is illegal for somebody to hire you. There are plenty of people who are legally prohibited from working. I mean, how stupid is that?
When you look at the real crash, how to save yourself and your country, you see the way of people saving themselves how?
Well, saving themselves, that has to do with getting out of the dollar. You know, don't hold U.S. treasuries. You know, don't hold bonds denominated in dollars. Don't own muni bonds, right? So get into currencies that are more likely to maintain their value, looking at other countries. Look at precious metals. Look at gold and silver. Look at stocks and economies that are going to improve as the U.S. dollar implodes, and that the world is no longer burdened by having to prop it up. You know, Americans live beyond their means, and we do, and we'll all acknowledge that. We run huge trade deficits, so we consume more than we produce. What makes that possible? It's all the countries that produce less than they consume. And when they stop doing that, when they stop living for us and live for themselves, I think you're going to have a big boom in the economies outside the United States, and so invest the profit from that. You know, so there are ways that you can help yourself. But as far as helping your country, that doesn't help your country, although it does put you in a position to bring the money home once we've got our house in order. But helping the country is a political movement. I mean, we've got to elect people into office that not only advocate capitalism, but understand it. See, I think Romney advocates for it, but doesn't really understand it. So we need people to really understand and that are committed to doing the right thing, that will put the country ahead of their political careers. Because the problem is, what's good politics is lousy economics. And so if you're going to put a professional politician in office whose job is to get reelected, he will never do the right thing. And so the country's just going to keep getting worse and worse and worse until we clean house in Washington, and not just Washington, but a lot of state houses. We need to get these career politicians out of office. We need a movement in this country. We need another American revolution.
The name of the book is The Real Crash, How to Save Yourself and Your Country. It is published by St. Martin's Press. Peter Schiff is the author. Peter, thank you very much for sharing time with us. I appreciate it.
Sure. Thanks for having me on.
Best of luck with the book. Thank you very much. Again, The Real Crash, How to Save Yourself and Your Country, published by St. Martin's Press. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.